It's the Puppet Parent Podcast. In this episode, we'll talk about dining out in New York City, past and present, streaming school disagreements between parents, and a white supremacist rally outside our door. It's all coming up next on the Puppet Parent Podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Puppet Parent Podcast.
I'm Z.
I'm Chad.
And we are puppeteers and parents, and we happen to have a podcast.
That's right. And man, are we parents this week. What a week. It's been streaming school week here in Western New York. So we're not going back to New York City anytime soon, except you went back to New York City.
I did. That's why we didn't record an episode last Sunday, because I was driving. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think you could record and drive at the same time?
Probably, but is it a good idea?
Yeah, probably not. No, although it's a beautiful drive. If you drive from Western New York to New York City and back, Route 17 is the way to go. It is spectacular. You go through the mountains, through the Catskills, I guess, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a beautiful drive, especially now fall is officially here, I think.
Not yet, but what day is it today? The 8th, 19th, 20th? We're almost at the fall equinox. I think it's the 21st.
It's in a few days. So, yeah. I mean, but basically, it's been cold. It's cold out here. We had our first couple frosts, and it's been super cold down here in the studio.
We're wondering
if there's heat, hoping that there's heat.
There's heat. There's a thermostat right there.
Oh, look at that.
Yep.
Wow, it maybe we should just turn it up.
62.
That's why it's been so cold. it just bumped up to 63.
It just bumped to 63 because we have the lights on and our bodies are here.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But that's our studio space. And speaking of our studio space, we should take this moment to say our weekly shout out to Springville Center for the Arts, who has granted us this amazing residency so that we can be living out here and working out here and continue our lives until we can get back to our regular lives.
Yeah. So for a brief instant, you left this studio space, and it's been 6 months. You went back to our old life for 2 days to get things done.
Like a day.
And so how was it dipping your toe back into the apartment that we're still paying rent for? We figured, well, you know, when we made that choice, you know, oh, we'll be right back. You know, it's going to be 3 months and then we're back. So we're not going to, you know, dump everything.
I'm still happy about that choice, even though it feels like, why are we paying money for something that we're not living in?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I love that apartment.
Yeah.
And even being there that one night, I was like, I love this apartment. Mm-hmm. And I know it's tiny, but it's close to everything that's important to us.
It's a love story, you and that apartment. It was like, when she first found it, she's like, oh, is it possible for a woman in a tiny apartment to hit it off right away?
Stop.
Yeah, and you called me on the phone. And you're like, I'm sorry, it just happened. I signed the lease.
Well, that did happen. But we have been in that apartment the entire time we've lived in New York City. I guess maybe I get really connected to where I'm living, because pretty soon, give it another 5 years, and I will have lived in that apartment longer than I have lived anywhere else. And it's a rent-stabilized apartment. So to answer the question about rent control that just came up in the chat, it's a rent-stabilized apartment. So what that means is that there's a board called the Rent Advisory Board in New York City who decides how much the rent can get raised on all these rent-stabilized apartments every year. And it's a percentage, usually. Or it could be a percentage or a certain monetary amount that it can get raised. And you can choose whichever is less or more or something like that.
So there's usually a couple options. You get like, okay, do you want to raise it 4% for 2 years or 2% for 1 year is usually what we got. There is rent control department also. I mean, there are many different types of apartments, especially in New York City. A lot of them that my friends lived in when we were there in our 20s.
Yeah.
There's nothing. You don't get a lease. You're just at the mercy of whoever the landlord is.
And so there's a lot of benefits to being in a rent-stabilized place. And so that was our first apartment, was a rent stabilized place. And I don't even think I really understood how fortunate we were at the time to have gotten that. It just seemed like an extra bonus. And, oh, and it's rent stabilized. That's so nice. And then over the years, pretty soon we'll have been there 15 years. Mm-hmm. It has turned out to be one of the best things that could have happened. And we just keep making it work. And it's very centrally located. It's super close to the train, which is great for Chad to be walking the shows onto the train back and forth. It's also really close to the grocery store and the post office. And
a bridge, so you can escape the city at any time.
That's or true.
Drive to the Bronx. Drive right on the major highway, so drive to Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. We didn't know like how centrally located of a hub it was.
Yes, and now we have a parking space. Because it's rent stabilized, we were able to afford eventually, just in the last year, a parking space almost right across the street from our building. And that has been huge because it's all on-street parking where we live. And so we're continuing to pay for both of those things because I want to be able to go back to our life. Like, I don't want to lose those things and then not have them again, because when we were there, it was so nice. And even coming back for this one night, it was great to pull into our parking space in the garage, to unload the car from there. You know, it was just, you know, a feeling of relief to know that there is something that's taken care of, in a sense, mm-hmm. that I don't have to worry about. And it's made it so that we can keep doing this. And then eventually, you know, we'll be back. But it felt nice, but also strange to be back, mm-hmm. Because I've never spent the night in the apartment without the kids, ever. I've been away from the kids, but not in the apartment.
Right.
And so that was strange. And I know that you have spent nights in the apartment without me and the kids, mm-hmm. but I've never spent a night in the apartment without you and the kids. And that was just weird. Yeah. I mean, I couldn't just relax and enjoy it, because also we didn't have the internet. Like, a lot of things were just like, I did get to order out my favorite food, though. I decided that.
Oh, what was your favorite food that you ordered?
It was a toss-up. I couldn't decide if I wanted to get Indian food or my favorite Italian food. And then I decided that I would go with Italian food, and then when we're there in October, I'll go with Indian food. So I did. It's just so hard because the food is so good. So I ended up getting this puttanesca dish from Ornella Trattoria, which is this amazing Italian restaurant.
That's on the next block over.
Yeah.
So that's the great thing about New York, is that you live where the restaurants are.
Yeah.
You could just walk. If you're in like one of those neighborhoods.
But I didn't walk. They brought it to me.
Right, because you can't eat in a restaurant.
And then I said, just leave it there downstairs. And uh-huh. I walked down and got it. So,
yeah.
And it tasted delicious. And it was my reward for driving all the way there.
That reminds me of so many of our life. You remember when we could just sometimes just order out, and like one of the hardest things was like, okay, I need to go to the store and get food so that I don't order out all the time. Man, what a life. What an amazing life, right? I was like, oh, man, because I had the Seamless app, you know, and I'm sure you too. I deleted it
off my phone because I used it too much. Because
it's just like so easy. It's like you're heading home after work, you're hungry, and you're just like, here we go. And boop. Okay, when I get home, food will be there.
I know. It's like magic. And it's I just wanted that magic. Food. I just wanted the magic of someone else making it and bringing it. I just wanted that, and yeah. There it was, and it was amazing.
Yeah. And we haven't had sushi in like...
I know. That was also... I was considering forever. Sushi, but you know what? I'm willing to wait until things are back to normal and to celebrate with sushi. Like a huge amount of sushi and like at least one large sake hot... maybe two.
And for all of our friends who are like I know that restaurants it's so hard right now and everyone's trying to struggle, but like once there's a vaccine, so many things will happen. All of our friends, like Missy over here in chat. Yes, you're all invited. Come on up to the neighborhood. We're gonna eat out all the time. And it's just like that's just what's gonna happen, because like Because?
Well, it was nice to be back. When we were there in March, April, and May, we didn't order out. And it wasn't because we didn't want to support the restaurants. There were a couple things happening. One is that we didn't know financially what was going to be happening with us. So we really wanted to conserve our money. And, you know, I felt bad for not supporting people, but also at the same time, half of our income, like, kind of just
disappeared.
Went away.
Yeah.
And so we just felt like, all right, tighten the belt. And then the other reason, too, was that the case rate was so high that I just felt like the less that we can have any contact with other people, the better. But now the case rate was very, very low overall in New York City. And it felt like a safe time to be able to order out. So
And way back in the spring, nobody knew anything. A lot of talk was, hey, man, did you get your fresh direct delivery? Guess what? You're going to have to wipe everything down with like an alcohol wipe because everyone was so afraid that it was transmitting on surfaces because that happened in a lab. So there were whole like videos that where parents were passing around that was like, you got to wipe down each thing individually.
Yeah.
You got to wipe down the bag before you bring it into your apartment. There's this whole to-do.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that was just part of the culture.
Or only get non-perishable goods and then leave them outside for 3 days.
Yeah.
In your garage, if you have a garage, or outside your door. Or when we were getting mail, we would leave the mail packages out in the hallway for a few days,
mm-hmm.
Just quarantining things. So, I mean, it's nice to feel like we're not in that place anymore. It's crazy to be remembering it so, like, so vividly because it wasn't that long ago.
Mm-hmm.
And also to get to witness some of the outdoor dining that's happening in New York City right now firsthand was really cool.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd heard about it, but I hadn't really seen any pictures, really.
Mm-hmm.
I also hadn't looked for pictures of it, you know, but
yeah,
to
why torture yourself?
Astoria, which already has a kind of a European vibe to it, suddenly looked very Euro, even more so because there were all of these little like outdoor cafes kind of happening, but not necessarily on the sidewalk like you would expect. It was also that they would take over the parking spaces that were in front of the restaurants and then construct a tent Chad is telling me where to look and to direct my voice. I'm trying, man. Here we go.
I appreciate
okay.
I like it when like we talk to each other and you talk all like quietly and stare deeply into my eyes. But you know, on a podcast, you know, it's
so outdoor dining. So there's they took over the parking spaces that are in front of the restaurants, and so each restaurant, you know, they all have their own aesthetic. You have the Mexican place across from the sports bar, which is next to the other Mexican place that's more like Southern California / Tex-Mex, you know. And so each one has their own kind of vibe with their outdoor cafe. It's not just some umbrellas and like some kind of fencing. It's like they built a fence and painted it to look like it was part of the restaurant. And each one is unique to them. Each one has like some plants or some lighting that's like really special. And it really looked really cool. And when I was at the eye doctor, because I don't know if you guys knew from last episode, but I went into New York City so that I could get mammogram, a flu shot, and well, there was one other thing. Oh, my teeth cleaned.
Oh, no.
And
dentist.
Then I happened to throw in the eye doctor too while I was in town, because why not?
Mm-hmm.
So when I was at the eye doctor, she told me that they've been calling in Astoria, they call this one of the main thoroughfares is called Steinway, which is named after the Steinway piano factory that's all the way at the end. They've been calling it Stiami because all the outdoor dining and
all the parties,
just, probably
illegal parties.
Yes, the parties. But it was cool. It was a very nice day that I was back. The sun was shining. People were outside. Most people had their masks on. The playgrounds were open again,
mm-hmm.
which was great to see because when we left, the playgrounds were still closed. Sprinklers were on. Kids were on bikes. I mean, you know, it felt like somewhere between normal and not normal. I don't know.
Mm.
It was like this weird in between, but it was livable, and it made me feel a little bit like we could do this. But also being here is you know, safe and nice, and we just don't know what's going to happen. And they keep pushing back the actual start date of in-person instruction for public schools in New York City. And the little micro school that our kids go to are having public instruction. They started a week and a half ago in person, 5 days a week. It's a very tiny school. It was a big decision for us to decide to not go. We didn't know how many kids were going to be doing remote learning and until like the day before or 2 days before. And then we found out, oh, it's four kids total. And of the four kids total, two of those kids are our kids. So that's cool. It's also, it's a little tough because there's only one kindergartner, our kid. And then there's two second graders, our kid and someone else's kid, which are about at the same levels in terms of reading and math and stuff. And so that's cool because I feel like they can challenge each other once they start to get challenged. There's a first grader. And so the first grader and our kindergartner, Finn, are kind of being put together in a sense. But luckily, you know, Finn is, you know, has done a lot over the summer and has just picked up a lot from being a younger brother of a kid who's already in school. So he's holding his own with the first grader. So I don't know at what point they're going to diverge from each other, but he's doing a great job, you know. And
he's reading sentences.
Yep.
Small, tiny, simple sentences, but he's reading them.
I see a mat. I'm like, yes, you do. You see it.
Was that something he read?
Yeah.
I see a mat.
I see a cat. I see a rat. I'm like, you see them all. Yes, you do.
Yay.
So
that's exciting.
And then I didn't tell you this, but this morning when I went down to get him because I was making waffles for the boys, which I think I'm just going to start doing for every Sunday. Sunday's
Yay.
Waffles.
Lovely.
Finn was just sitting there on the floor. He must have been starting to get his clothes on and then stopped. And I said, what are you doing? And he had a Pete the Cat book from the library that I'd gotten out. And he was like, I'm reading. And I thought, awesome, because I've never, ever caught him, like, reading on his own. And I was like, oh, cool. You know, mm-hmm. trying to be like, no big deal. And inside I'm like, yeah, he's doing it. So, I mean, who knows how many words he could actually read in Pete the Cat. But just the fact that he was, like, looking at a book on his own without an adult, and it wasn't a graphic novel, it wasn't a comic book. Not that there's anything wrong with those, but this was a book that he could theoretically actually read a lot of the words in. It was exciting.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. I'm so proud of you. Do you remember when our first little baby talked, like said their like first word or two for
giraffe.
Like the first time? And we were like, yeah! And he looked at us like, ah!
Oh,
like,
no.
He scared the hell out of him.
I don't remember
actually. I remember that. And he was like, yeah. And we're like, ah! Oh, no. Shh, okay, no, it's cool.
Quiet celebrations.
Yeah, we're like, oh, no. Keep going. Oh, we scared him. Oh, crap. So many little things. I think I have the memory because I was like, oh no, at the time, you know, upset emotional memories are the ones that like stick with you.
Yeah.
You know, which is why photos are so important because I feel like a social media feed, unless I'm ranting about something, it's like it's full of nice moments, nice, you know, like good things.
Mm-hmm.
You don't take a picture of like the bad things.
Mm-hmm.
You only take a picture and share like the good things, right? I mean, one would hope.
I think most people, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So being in New York was good. And for those of you wondering, it was not a mammogram. I kept saying mammogram this whole time, but it actually was an ultrasound of my right breast. It turns out there was a cyst there because people were wondering what the doctor had said. I'm just going to tell you my medical information. I just am.
Awesome.
Because the last time we had talked about it, I had said, she told me not to worry, so I didn't worry, and I don't know anything about what's going on.
Yeah, that's a cliffhanger.
Yeah. So it was a cyst that they found in my right breast, and they wanted to check up on it 6 months later to see if there was any change. Well, no change. Mm-hmm. So I just get to go in again in 6 months and have it mushed around with some warmed jelly. It was very nice. They pre-warmed the jelly. I was like, oh, that's so nice.
Is it the same kind of thing that they used on you when you were pregnant?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
But no little like whoa, 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 whoa.
There's no heartbeat. They're not looking for a heartbeat.
Yeah.
They're just you're just laying there with your arm up above you and they're like pushing this thing around. So, yeah. But it, you know, 10 minutes later, they called me and said, no change, come back in 6 months.
That's great.
So, so that was good. And then I got out of there fairly early. So then I was walking down 31st Street and thought, you know what, I'll just stop in my eye doctor. Turned out they had just had a cancellation. So she saw me right away because I have to get my eyes checked for yearly because glaucoma runs in my family and no one wants to go blind, especially a puppeteer.
Wow. So, when do we start taking the kids to the eye doctor? Probably pretty soon.
They get eye checks through annual physical and stuff.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, if there was any kind of issue, we would see it there. There's nothing to be concerned about until you're later in life for that.
I don't know if you could tell, you know, when they're early on, like if there's something going on.
They squint a lot.
Okay.
Yeah. I think there's other probably signs too, but that's my understanding is they squint a lot. And all of a sudden, I just had a hard time seeing. That's when I didn't need glasses till I was about in like sixth grade, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And then all of a sudden I was like, oh, that would be helpful. So then I wore contacts for a while. And then I realized that I'm not responsible with contacts. And then I got glasses, which are a lot easier to handle and manage. So anyway, I got my eyes checked. And then I got a flu shot at CVS, and then, which was crazy because I had signed up for the Minute Clinic. You're standing in there. There's all these signs on the floor that tell you to go to the Minute Clinic. So I was like, oh, okay, flu shot, Minute Clinic. So I go to this Minute Clinic, and there's a screen, and I'm touching the screen with my knuckle because I'm, of course, afraid to touch anything with my fingers. It's like the silliest way to try to avoid touching things because you're still touching it, but whatever. And then
you could get one of those contact gloves.
I guess I could. Whatever. And then I finish filling out the whole thing. It takes me like 4 or 5 minutes. And then as soon as I hit enter, this door right next to it just magically opens up. And it's this little closet and there's a woman sitting inside. And it was like, oh my God, it's like Sleep No More. Like the closet just opened and there you are. And you're talking to me. So I guess it's different. But that turned out because we have Health First. They don't accept Health First at the Minute Clinic, but they do accept it at the pharmacy. So then I had to go to the pharmacy to get my flu shot. Weird.
But it's the same counter and the
so
same
weird.
People.
Yep.
Yes.
And then I got my teeth cleaned, and it turns out I have a tiny, tiny cavity. So when I go back on October 29th with you guys so that we can vote, everybody is going to vote, I'm also going to get my cavity filled. But I'm going to be very brave.
Yeah, that's not so bad. Tiny little cavity.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I took care of all those things, and then I drove back to Western New York.
Good job.
Mm-hmm.
Good job.
Thanks.
You got all that stuff done.
And I got all the kids' fall clothes and all their winter gear.
Yeah, you were a very useful engine.
I was a useful engine.
Yay.
Mm-hmm. Chad held down the ship. Well, I was gone.
Yep.
Good job, Chad.
Held down the ship by doing not much at all. I'm just going to move this mouse over here because
I can't see the chat. It's so far away.
Riobina is talking her ear off, man.
I know. I got to look on my phone because it's too far away from me.
Yes. She says, yes, vote, save your country. Well, Riobina. Oh, this country. Actually, fun story. We did a couple of protests in the village here when we first got here, first month, Black Lives Matter protests. And we felt very justified because there were people who've in our country that have been under attack their entire lives. And thanks to social media and like everything that's happening right now, like maybe the mass media loves a good, you know, like, the tragedy. We're seeing more and more and more of that. And so we protested and we felt very justified. Yesterday, there was a different type of rally in town.
Oh, yeah.
So we drove up.
We're very rural right now. If you're wondering where we are, we're south of Buffalo in a tiny town.
We're in a village that's less than 5,000 people, I believe.
I don't know.
I think it's 5,000 people, something like that. And yeah, the people that you'd see on TV doing embarrassing things. I'm just going to say that, like, it's embarrassing. My country, it's embarrassing all the time. Our federal government, embarrassing. It's just, it's very obviously corrupt, right? Like a lot of dictatorships around the world, ours is like a wannabe dictatorship too. And the people that cheer those awful corrupt people in the Republican Party, I don't want to say they're the dumb ones, but I will say that they vote consistently against their own interests. And this happens in every country. But yesterday we got to hear them. We didn't stick around to see them, but we got to hear them parading down the street, holding their flags, holding their Blue Lives Matter flags, and waving the American flag and shouting USA, USA, and other things to parading around town. So they had their moment. We had our moment protesting against the systemic racism and murder of Black Americans. Mm-hmm. And they had their moment shouting USA, USA. I just can't figure out, not that I don't understand the platform of our neighbors, but I just can't figure out, like, why? Was it because our most prominent liberal feminist Supreme Court justice died? Can't be because it's Rosh Hashanah, because that'd be too 4D chess. It's I think people feel insecure, or maybe they feel like they aren't being heard in the national dialogue, or they want to root for their team.
Wait, back up, Holza. Did you just say that's too 4D chess?
Yes.
Like a game where the chess pieces come to life and hurt each other? Like, what do you mean, 4D chess?
4D chess, it's like an internet thing.
Okay. Where I clearly, like, didn't get that reference.
We're having a galaxy brain moment, Z, where I'm speaking all in memes.
trying to be the common man here and say I just don't understand. But I do understand everything else that you said.
Yeah.
And, well, you know what? I was raised in a right-wing, very conservative household on, conservative talk radio and all of these. Like, if Fox News was a thing back in the 80s and 90s, I would have listened to that all day, too, probably. And, I mean, there's a lot of me still in there somewhere that, like, kind of understands it. I don't agree with it, but I do understand it. I think people are feeling threatened. And the way to make yourself feel better is to find other people that agree with you, and then, you know, show up, and that makes you feel better, you know. And what's interesting about being out here is I do think that there are people who are voting for Biden, but nobody is putting a Biden sign on their lawn. I have not seen one Biden sign, but we see a ton of Trump flags and Trump signs in people's lawns. And I mentioned it to my in-laws, and they said, oh, yeah, people take them down. If you put a Biden sign in your lawn, people take it down. And I thought, you know, that's so interesting, because the opposite happens in New York City. If you see somebody with a Trump sticker, if somebody puts a Trump sticker, like, on a telephone pole, people take it down.
Yeah.
And so it's like it goes both ways. And right now, you know, I don't know that we're the minority, but we're definitely not the vocal majority.
Well, as of yesterday.
As of yesterday, but then also visibly. If you were to just drive through, you'd think it's Trump country out here.
I mean, it technically is. So, but that's like everywhere in the entire United States of America. Is cities swing liberal, the rural parts swing more what they call conservative. It's the same thing everywhere. Like in India, it's definitely the big, it's like you go to the more rural places in India, you definitely find people who are stuck in the past or stuck in more traditional thinking. And it's the same here. And the politicians who want to keep themselves in power whip those people into a frenzy with like one or two social issues that, you know, pick your poison, pick whatever decade it is. Like, we're going to pick something for people to get angry about. And then they show up to the polls. And I feel like, okay, all right, if you're not one of those people, if you feel like you're on the other side of the fence, if you feel like you understand what's going on in this country, if you feel empathy towards your fellow human beings, you need to show up and vote. Because if you don't, the people who are showing up and voting are going to vote against your and their interests. And it's like anywhere else in the world. So it's not that our country needs saving specifically. It's that the people who've been voted into power are awful. And you can see the same thing in Brazil and a lot of other countries that are going through the same, and Australia.
And I feel the need to step in and say our opinion is that the people who are in power right now are not great.
Of course. I'm not speaking for my entire country or for all puppeteers or all parents.
I don't know why I feel like this need to say it. Yeah. I don't know why. Maybe, again, I think it's just because I was brainwashed for like 15 years. And there's something about me. I've been finding solace in is thinking about the night that Barack Obama was elected. That was one of the best nights ever. It was awesome. I remember that night we were in our friend Brett Vanderbrook's apartment in Harlem, and he lived like on a fourth floor walk up, I think, or third floor walk up apartment. And we're watching the Daily Show commentary on the election, and Jon Stewart announces it and he says, "Barack Obama is president of the United States." And I was like, yes, yes. And I just started putting my shoes on. I'm like, what are you doing? We got to go outside. And everybody's like, what? And I was like, we got to go to the streets. And I just put my shoes on. I run out the door. You and the other guys are behind me trying to catch up.
Yes.
And I'm like high-fiving every single person in Harlem I can see. We did it. We did it. He did it. Ah! And then we went down to Adam Clayton Powell Square, and there was a huge gathering right there, and it was amazing. It was amazing to be there. I mean, the energy was just like, oh God. And there was huge screens up, and it was just so magical, that moment. And I remember like feeling that energy. It just stayed for days, you know. I would be on the train and I'd be looking at people and just smiling because I was just like, you guys, we did it. And it was the first time that I've ever felt so fiercely patriotic for our country, so much so that I wanted to take a flag and wave it around because I was like, look what we did. We did it. We did this thing. And it was like a symbol to me of like what was possible because of the country that we have.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I've continued to love the Obamas throughout. You know, I thought that they did what they could do during the time that they had. And then to take that also and to flip it, those same feelings, I think that people who voted for Trump probably felt that when he won, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God, we did it. So, I mean, there's just this, it's so hard to be a highly empathetic person in the midst of all this, because I can't just hate on everybody who doesn't agree with me. I just can't. And it's hard because I think that a lot of the same things that I have felt in the not so distant past, like with Barack Obama's election and everything that he did that I thought was so great, people are feeling about Trump, you know? And it's so frustrating. Like, why can't there be a middle ground, you know?
I feel like the middle ground is gone because of the war on truth, you know? Like, I would be totally fine with people being on different sides of the issue if the people on the other side of the aisle weren't fed lies and then regurgitate those lies. And it's so easy to fact check something. It's so easy. You can do it in half a second. Hey, did he say something that was true or false? Let me Google that really quick. Let me find a reputable news source with journalists. And that's their job, is to, you know, give you the truth.
Mm-hmm.
But there are whole organizations and like news in quotes outlets, and there's so much so many barriers to the truth now, and this is, I feel like that's the real travesty, and that's why we're here in 2020 with this country that is, you know, 200,000 Americans dead, and the people responsible for it are pushing the blame on anyone but themselves and are telling you that the sky is not blue. Actually, the sky is not blue in on the West Coast. But if we could just agree on something, you know, if we could agree what is true, I think we would be fine. It would be like the 80s, maybe. I don't know. But because we can't, because people have just been brainwashed willingly and regurgitate whatever is told to them, that's why we can't have nice things.
Well, this is why we have to turn to the young people. This is why we have to turn to young people. Mm-hmm. Because honestly, you know, now we're in a we're starting to be in an entire generation of peoples who are alive, which will be happening soon, who were raised with Sesame Street, with Mr. Rogers, with all of this kind of stuff that told us sharing is good, listening and being kind is good. Like, this is how you have, like, you know, mental health, like, your social and emotional well-being is important, and understanding that that you need a certain level of emotional maturity to be able to, you know, function in an adult world. Like, I think young people are more in tune with that than I think, and I don't want to be ageist, but I think that there are a generation of people who just didn't get that message growing up, because of the way that people were parented, because of the way that we raised children. And I think that the way that we're raising children now is so different, and that we are creating whole new generations of leaders who will hopefully lead us, like, not to be like, the children are our future, but I believe that the children are our future. And mm-hmm. I think that, you know, as much as we can tell them, like, anything is possible, and you can. I mean, I've been listening to Michelle Obama's Becoming book, which is read by her, and if you haven't listened to her read it, it's, like, so moving. And just listening to her upbringing and backstory and everything, it just makes me feel like it is true. Anything is possible if you really believe and do it and just, like, set your intentions. And I mean, you can do it, you know? I don't know. Follow your dreams. Mic drop. So, but I don't know. It's a stressful time. We're still here. We're not going back to New York City, but when I went back, it felt possible to go back. But yeah, the reason that we didn't go back is because we don't know what's going to happen. And we want as stable an existence as possible for the kids. And knowing that there's a possibility, knowing that the cold weather is coming, people are going to be indoors, and the possibility of the infection rate going back up again and us being locked back indoors again. I just want to be able to have the freedom to go outside with the kids, you know, and have that. And we didn't really have that as much back home.
No. I mean, there's a reason they're saying that the death toll is going to double by Christmas. You know, that's, I mean, it's crazy to think about, but it's true. No. And one of the reasons is there's no work. There's no in-person work, so our business can't function as before. So we would have to stream everything.
You are getting requested.
From our bedroom.
People are calling us to do in-person shows, though. I just want to make that clear. We are getting phone calls for that. But what do you say when people call?
Not a ton.
No. Can you come and do Timmy's show? We're only going to have 20 people in the backyard socially distanced.
There was somebody who called us and said, we're going to have families in separate cars, and you could just perform. And to which I said, no. And that was, like, the most extremely nice of, like, we want to make a puppet show happen. No, when people call and they say, hey, can you come and do this party in New Jersey or wherever? I say, we're not doing in-person shows at this time.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Yeah.
And if they're really insistent, I say, we're actually nowhere near you. We moved out to Western New York. But most people who call asking mm-hmm. for puppet shows are, you know, they have their plan front and center about how it's going to be safe, right? But we're like a full step back from that, of just like, it's not, we don't feel safe, actually. That's not our comfort level.
Well, here's the thing, too, is that you never want to be that one instance, that one company that gets associated with some kind of super spreader event that you had no control over. Because while the client might say, here's all the things that we're going to do, at the end of the day, you're just the help. You show up, you do the show. You are not in charge of how people end up socially distancing if they're following protocol. And, you know, what if suddenly a month later, there's a news story that breaks. WonderSpark puppets performed at some kid's birthday party, and now, you know, somebody's, you know, sick or worse.
Or worse.
So we just don't, we would never want to be associated with anyone getting sick. There's no harm in just waiting a little longer. You know, I think that there's this internal push, and we've talked about this before, to like, well, other people are getting back to normal. Shouldn't we just get back to normal? Maybe we should just get back to normal. And then it's like, well, hold on, wait. Why am I feeling like I need to get back to normal? Okay, maybe we should just wait a little longer. And then once I breathe and think about that and say it's okay to wait a little longer, then I'm like, you know what? You're right. It's okay to wait a little longer, because in that way I don't have to feel stressed the whole time about, are we doing everything we need to be doing? Did you wash your hands? Oh my God. I mean, we're still doing that a bit, but it's not like to this crazy extent, because we're not interacting with people like that, you know?
And, you know, like when I project as like a theater performer,
as a performer,
my breath is going all over everybody. So it doesn't matter if you're 6 feet away or 12 feet away, I'm entrained to hit the back of the audience, you know? So even if I have a mic, I'm still talking loud. I can't help it. And yeah, like, we want to keep our family safe, your family safe. It's just not a good mix. And that's why theaters, or even mobile entertainers, we feel are not going to come back outside of on a screen until probably next spring, next fall, something like that. There are people who do what we do who still do shows. And I just saw an ad. I've been seeing this ad all over the place. Hey, my name is so-and-so, and, you know, tune in to hear how I talked about how I got 57 performances this summer throughout the quarantine.
And what I said to you about that, when you talked to me about that before, and I'm going to say it again, is that we are not here to judge anyone else's choices, that we don't know anybody else's reality and what their situation is. You know, we have kids, like, and so immediately that changes things. Immediately. You know, we have said before that if we didn't have the kids, we probably would have stayed in New York, you know, because it's not like, you know, we're just like two middle class white kids who were like, oh, you know what? It would be great if we could just like have some space. It was more like, oh my gosh, we have been in this apartment and we have an opportunity to leave. I think that maybe we should leave for a little bit, and because the kids needed it.
They needed to run around outside. Mm-hmm. They need to exercise. And they need stimulation for their brains, and just being like locked in solitary isn't going to do it. Now, I don't mean to hate on anybody, but it's just not where we're at. And every time that I see that happening, it's not often, I just feel like we are on just different roads, man.
It's different life choices. It's different life choices. Like, you never know how you're going to act in whatever high intensity, high stress situation you're in. And I mean, nobody could have said to me, you know, this is what I think you're going to do in the middle of a global pandemic, mm-hmm. One that has killed like over 23,000 of your New York City neighbors. I don't know what I would have done. Nobody would know what they would do. You think you would be the best version of yourself. And then it happens and you're like, oh man, some of that was true. Some of the best versions of myself came out. And then also some not so great versions of myself came out. And you do your best, but you don't know how you're going to react. Yeah. And this is a great segue to say, again, that if you're having a hard time, make sure that you reach out to people, right? That we care about all of you. And this is really tough. And it's still happening. And it was just a day. There was a day for every one of us where we suddenly realized this is going to continue to happen for a really long time, and it's not going back to normal, and it's affecting me in a way that in a much bigger way than I ever anticipated. I think all of us had that day, and it's really hard sometimes to be okay with that. So if you need to talk to somebody, make sure you talk to somebody, but you matter and you're important, and make sure to reach out, you know, make some phone calls, you know, tell people you miss them. I mean, one of the nice things about this time period has been that I've been in touch with people a lot more. As much as I've been so busy and not able to write people back, I have been able to call people on the phone a bit, and that's been really nice. So,
Yeah.
That's a little PSA.
Yeah, no, I mean, on my end, you know, I've been trying, like, I feel like for 6 months, I tried so hard to continue the A business, and we did. We did all right. You know, like, we got work. You know, here or there, we scraped by. I was able to tell unemployment, you know what? I did make over that dollar amount this week. Thank you very much. And other times, it was like, no. But after 6 months, it's like it's time to hang up our hats a little bit, because our target audience is in school. And when they're not in school, they don't want to deal with watching screens anymore. From our kids' perspective, it's a total fact where we do school and streaming school in the morning, and then trying to, even if we could, get them to sit back down and do streaming school in the afternoon, it would be ultra tough. Do they want to watch a puppet show on top of that? Probably not. Or any kind of performance, you know, any extracurricular. So, from a business end, like, we're pivoting once again to try and help out teachers and do like after school programs and stuff like that. And that's where we're going to be. I feel like, in a way, we didn't even realize, but the summertime was actually kind of the best time to stream and stream shows, because everyone's not in school. I'm kind of realizing that now that we're back in school, those opportunities are gone because no one is available at 10 a.m. on a weekday or 11 a.m. on a weekday anymore. You know, it's all just tiny little babies.
Yeah. I mean, just the landscape of what we were offering and who's available to enjoy it has changed a lot. But again, that might change again. I mean, the time that we were the most needed was right at the beginning.
Yeah.
And I think that we offered a service to a lot of people, and hopefully we helped a lot of people. I know that, you know, some of them wrote to us and told us how much we helped them, and that's great. Mm-hmm. And right now, this month, I feel like we're just kind of banding together as a family, you and me and your parents too, because it's like one big team at this point, to try to wrap our heads around what is our new schedule. What is this new schedule, and how is it going? And how is video school, or as our kids call it, screen school? How's screen school going? You know, we're trying our best to make it work. And to be perfectly honest, Chad and I are two different levels of this. Chad's like totally hands-off, and I'm probably more hands-on than I need to be. So as we were talking about finding a happy medium, he and I also are working at finding that happy medium. We decided this week is Chad's week to be with them while they're at school. I will not be there, which will be hard for me, clearly, because I want to be there, because I feel like I know exactly what they're doing, and I want to make sure that the teacher knows what they're doing. I've been working so closely with your mom to make sure that they are consistent with everything. That's the town fire alarm, if you're wondering is. But I'm going to step away, which is probably healthy for me and also healthy for you. And then somehow in between, we can find Chad being a little more hands-on and me being a little more hands-off, and then somewhere in there.
Thanks.
Yep. That's what we're working on. So parenting.
Oh,
it's all
parenting.
About finding that compromise spot.
Yeah, that where everyone's happy enough, but there's always like somebody always loses in a compromise.
That's true.
Somebody always has to be cool with losing.
Well, that's me this week. A little.
Well, it was me last week, so
we're gonna be okay, but it's hard. It's hard when you have different opinions.
Yeah.
It's really tough. There are things that we can all work on, and so I'm going to work on being a little bit more hands-off to let especially our older son in particular thrive a little more independently. I do think that our kindergartner needs the direction of a second person there, because he's in kindergarten, and, you know, he needs that. But
I'm on the other side saying, like, just let the teacher teach, man. There's already a streaming teacher there. They, like, we have to trust that they know what they're doing. I'm a streaming teacher too. I'm doing a class this Monday afternoon where I'm extremely hands-on and I never go off. I don't give them any homework. I'm just like, let's all be together, and I'm here for 60 minutes of class, you know, and then I move on to the next one. But it's like during those 60 minutes, it's like I feel like, you know, unless there's some kind of issue, that the students are paying attention, or they should be, if I'm doing my job, right? Like, there's no need for somebody to repeat what I'm telling them, unless there's some kind of situation. So that's where I'm at, where I feel like, maybe I feel like too much. Like my mom, who was a kindergarten teacher for a long time, you know, we tell her, like, hey, this is what's been going on, and she's like, well, I would have done it this way. And I don't want to be too much that guy, you know, but also I feel like giving them the responsibility of, like, hey, you know, it's up to you to be responsible to my kids, to figure this out and get it done. And if you have a problem, you know, I'm going to be here. But my perspective is I don't need to repeat or step on the teacher's
absolutely not. But things. If the child is not wearing the headphones and they can't hear what the teacher is saying because they're not wearing their headphones, then what?
Well, take a time machine back to earlier in the session where we bugged them too much. That's how I feel.
I'm excited to see how your week goes. I'm not wishing you ill will. I want you to do well. I want you to succeed, because I would like to be more hands off, but I feel like it's not possible. So I want you to prove to me that it is possible so that I can find it within myself to do that.
I feel like if we had sent our kids to school, right? Mm-hmm. You check in with the teacher at the end of the session, mm-hmm. like we do every day. Hey, how'd it go today? Oh, yeah, you know, this happened. We're working on this. Okay, great. And then I know what to talk to them about, you know, on our way to the subway. That's what we had been doing
But the difference is that the teacher is there to be able to see, like, how the handwriting is going, like, what they're working on, if they're working on the things that they're supposed to be working on. And also, mm-hmm. the way that this class is set up, there's four students. And like I said, there's a kindergartner, a first grader, and two second graders. They do 15 minutes with the teacher, and then the teacher meets with other kids for 15 minutes. So they need to be working on their own stuff for that 15-minute block. And I feel like it's in that time where the teacher is not engaging with that student mm-hmm. that we need to be there to make sure that the work is happening.
Or else, what would happen?
It won't get done, I guess.
I guess maybe the teacher would have to say something. And you're scanning, you've been scanning like a maniac all their work in. So yes. The teacher would be able to check out the work, or we would see the work. I don't know. I mean, we'll figure out a good, I think we'll both be in a slightly different, but compromisey place by October, maybe.
I feel like I'm only bringing it up because I feel like this podcast is a place where we're very honest with our struggles, and that I want other parents to know that this is a struggle that we're having in case they're having a similar struggle. And that this is just something that came up this week, and that we definitely had a moment, and then we're going to work it out. And so this is the compromise that we came to is this. Yeah. So,
no, I mean, a lot of it comes from not just my personal feelings about mm-hmm. schooling, but also me feeling deep down that I hated school, hated it. And if kids, if you're listening to this in the future and you're not, hated it. All these issues at home invaded feelings of school and mixed up into this big anxiety-ridden, terrible mess. And I was a horrible student, and things just didn't get done for a lot of different reasons. But, like, I'm feeling those feelings again watching them in school. That's why I don't want to be anywhere near them when they're in school, because I don't want to go back to school. I hated that place. You know, like, the whole thing, the whole scenario. Ugh, terrible. So
But they have to learn stuff.
Yeah, that's why the teacher's there.
And it's not possible for us to do homeschooling because I have a job and you have a job.
Yep.
And it wouldn't be fair to them to try to schedule around both of those things. And we thought about homeschooling. We did think about it. And there are so many amazing success stories of homeschoolers. But for our life and the way that it's just worked out, that just wasn't a good choice for us right now. I also had a very hard time in school. Yeah. My hard time in school didn't start until a little bit, I think, later than your hard time. Mm-hmm. Mine kind of started to really go downhill around fifth grade, and then seventh grade was really bad. By the time we got to seventh grade, things were not good.
Mine was more like year one.
Year bad. One was also bad, but for some reason it didn't really, really affect me until fifth grade. Because I just figured, I don't know. I still was like a pretty happy kid, even though I didn't like certain things that were happening. Mm. So anyway, all that is to say that this is why they go to the school that they go to, because we really like that school. And I trust their choices. And even when I question their choices, it turns out most of the time to be, great. And works out really well. And then we do like supplemental stuff at home. Mm-hmm. And that's been really nice. So in some ways, I call it like the hippie homeschool situation. But it's really a micro school, and they're going to become an accredited private school. And we like it. And, we just have to support the work that they're doing. So
yes, and step back and just say, you know what? Even if I disagree with these choices, we agreed to send these kids to this school. So even if they were learning cursive, which I feel like is a dead
language. They're not learning cursive. Who's learning cursive?
That was one of the things from the first year.
I don't know if they're still going to learn cursive.
Cursive?
Those were the third graders that year.
I'm using that as an example.
Okay.
So it's actually better if they're not doing it anymore. That's great. So
I don't think they are.
Poop all over cursive because cursive, who needs it?
I don't think
learn typing are. Instead. Let's get with the future. I think it's hilarious that a school that was so anti-screen is now having a teacher teach our kids over screens. Hilarious. But there's only four kids.
Pandemic.
No, it's just like, to me, it's like that was a big thing, was like letting go of these feelings where for a while it felt like, oh, is our school going to have a no screens for the rest of the day policy? And they were, because they were encouraging that, and because I'm so anti that, and that was a thing.
We're more about moderation.
Now I'm just like, oh, whew.
But now we're in a really great place with the moderation. Like the kids mm-hmm. have, their hour a day, and that's it. And sometimes they get to have a little bit more, but not like solo time, alone in a corner or anything. It's like all like together, like a family.
Yeah, but I didn't. We didn't sign up for a Waldorf school where you sign a contract saying that you can't look at any screens during the day.
That not all of them are like that.
I take extra care to put the phone away anytime they're around or anytime they're engaging. You just put the phone away, look directly at them, and let's talk and let's play. And today, actually, Finn has this idea for a fort. Mm-hmm. So he was making the fort out in the woods, and it took this whole thing where like getting the screw gun, battery ran out, go back to get another battery, dead again, like back and forth. And we were having like a lot of exercise. And then I was telling him, little surprise, we made a sukkah out in the woods.
Wow.
And I was telling him like, oh, this is a sukkah, because he really wanted a roof.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, we'll make a sukkah roof. We talked about sukkahs, and he's like, I've been in a sukkah before, and it was like a learning moment. We talked about a sukkah, by the way, is this Jewish thing with the holiday of Sukkot, where you build a shack that you have to be able to see the stars through slats in the roof. So it's like a bunch of sticks, mm-hmm. stick roof. And we always go out to the Fish's house, a friend of the Fish's, and have dinner.
We'll miss them so much.
So we're making a sukkah out in the woods.
We'll have to send them a picture of our sukkah.
Yeah, we just need some walls. But it's been great. But would I tell that same kid that we spent so much outdoor play with, no, you can't play video games or watch movies or have any interactions with screens. No, because it's too one-sided.
Yeah, I've never been.
You got to do both.
Totally anti-screens. I just wanted moderation, more moderation. I feel like we finally really achieved that. Where like they're happy with the schedule. We're happy with the schedule. Everybody knows what the schedule is, so that's been good. Yeah. Let's see. Is there anything else to announce? There's an article in the Batavia Daily. If anybody's from Western New York and you get the Batavia Daily, actually, they had two puppet articles 2 days in a row, which is awesome. So there's an article about me doing Foley on Sesame Street in Saturday's issue. And then on Sunday, there's an article about my friend Josh Rice and Perry and some kind of like serpent that they did in a puppet pageant parade down Main Street in Perry. So puppets made the news 2 days in a row in the Batavia Daily. Yay, puppets.
Yay.
And
I'm looking for a post so I can moderate the chat.
Oh. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that's been happening. Now the next big thing is going to be us going back October 28th to the 29th to vote and for the kids to get their teeth cleaned and to go to the doctors because they haven't been to the doctors in a long time. So they need to get caught up on their vaccines and stuff. So cool. They'll get their flu shots and stuff. Yep.
So one last story before we go.
What's the last story?
Last story is how you went to New York City.
Oh, I didn't know. I was not going to bring this up.
What? It's such a good story.
I wasn't going to bring it up.
It's such a good story. It was a secret, and now it's done, and now we can talk about it. What? I'm not trying to embarrass you. No way. It's like this is a story of how we triumphed yet again through adversity, and we were a team, mm-hmm. and we got through it together. And because we got through it together, we learned things. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Let's start with the embarrassing part. Just get out of the way.
Well, one of the reasons that I was going back to New York City was to get this one puppet show for Rosh Hashanah called The Silent Shofar, which is in a bag in our bedroom. And what did I not bring back from New York City was the puppet show in a bag in our bedroom. I brought all this other stuff back. I did all these other things.
Ultrasound. Dentist, eyes. I mean, that's probably why, because you were so busy for a day.
I was
and a
thinking
half.
About myself. I was. Yeah. I was thinking about myself a lot. And
you got something to eat. You're back home. You're feeling all these feelings. You know, it's easy to get distracted. So I totally understood.
He was very understanding.
Thanks.
You were. I even volunteered to drive back. I said, ugh. I can drive back. And you were like, don't drive back.
I hate driving back.
But you wouldn't have driven back. I would have driven back.
I know. It's just like the very idea of just going back.
I don't mind it.
I had to do that once. Remember, we were at a con.
I know.
And I had to, and I forgot to drive to the DVD place and pick up a box of DVDs to sell at the con. So I had to drive 4.5 hours back to New York City and then hoof it back. And the whole time, just like, ugh.
All right. Well, tell the nice people. I'll get a couple of the puppets.
Yeah. Okay. So. The plan was, okay, we have enough. It's a hand puppet show. We have enough hand puppets. We can figure
from
it out.
From other shows.
From other shows. Because we have almost every single show in a closet right here in the studio with Love Inc. above us, except for two shows. One is a Rosh Hashanah show, and the other is our Purim show. Because we figured, hey, we'll be back in town by September. This won't be a big deal. We left it behind. We actually physically could not fit anything else in the car, both trips, including the rice cooker. She brought back the rice cooker, but not sadly not the puppet show. So, and I'm like, yes,
I don't know
rice
what
cooker.
Happened.
Yeah.
I don't know
I've told.
Happened.
We've all been there, man. We've all like, wait, where's that? I was supposed to bring this with me. My brother forgot his passport. No, my brother forgot his wallet, which had everything in it on his way to Finland.
Oh, that's
the only
true.
Thing
I
he
remember
had
that.
Was his passport. And my dad told him over the phone, just go into a bank, any bank, and with your silver tongue, just like make a transaction somehow. And he did. And that's how he was able to get to the airport. Anyway, that's another story.
Because he didn't have any money to get to the airport.
Yes, he was running out of gas because he was driving from Virginia up to New York.
My God.
Anyway, that's another story. So we'll figure it out because we've always figured it out in the past. Whenever there's been like a situation, the client doesn't know, the audience doesn't know. We'll just figure it out, grab some puppets from some other things, you know, or just like, oh my God, there's like one thing that needs to get done. Just like grab something, get one of the kids' toys, put incorporate it into the show. And because we do that, it always turns out better. You always try something new, right? I could have just done the same exact show I do every single year. It's in me. I don't need to rehearse. Just do it. Just regurgitate it every single year. So this time we're just like, okay, what do we got?
So we pulled puppets from other shows, and one of the shows that we pulled puppets from was our show Chicken Soup, Chicken Soup. And it's a show that one of the puppets is based off of my grandmother, my Jewish grandmother. Mm-hmm. And so this is her, but we decided to make her the rabbi. So it must be a Reformed temple. So a female rabbi. And then made this yarmulke, which look at the embroidery around the edging.
Beautiful. And then. And she made this too. She made this. This has wires inside of it so it can conform to the puppet's body.
Yeah, I sewed in pipe cleaners for the edging, and then I just made the taluses. Is that what they're called?
I think so.
I don't know. Sorry. at the edges to just be like little knotted pieces. So this is my grandma, but my grandma was the rabbi. So Grandma Mary, you became a rabbi.
Yay.
And you helped us. Again, my angel, Grandma Mary, always right. looking out for us. Mwah.
Mwah. Yeah. And
Dad, I like you very much. You're a nice boy.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Yay. Mm-hmm. Well, we try. So we cobbled together stuff. Mm-hmm. All the puppets in Chicken Soup are felt, needle felted. So we had to use the other ones are Mystery Max puppets, and they're totally different. They're made from a mold. They have shiny faces. These guys are beautiful and needle felted, so they needed to be from the same universe. So we're like, okay, we got Bubby. She could be the rabbi.
Why? I'm the rabbi.
Because I
was the rabbi. That's right.
I can do an old Jewish woman voice. It's very silly, and everyone understands that it's comedy.
yes, that's true.
It's not real. It's nowhere near real.
But we were very pleased with how the tallis came out.
Yeah.
And yeah, we did even this little piece at the back here.
Look at that.
And
Zia, don't touch the microphone.
But I won't. I'm not. I'm going around the mic. See how I did that?
But she banged that out like an hour.
I'm taking over the podcast. Woo!
While I was doing... like it's a very simple show, but I was like, okay, we need more wooden spoon puppets because we original show we had wooden spoon puppets in the show. The original show we pulled from stuff to make it. In fact, it's hilarious. It's like
it's
a
still,
pulled from show.
Yes.
We're using our Purim puppets and puppets from things that didn't work, wooden spoons, just to make it, and we didn't have it, so we just had to, you know, zhuzh it over again.
We dug deep, people.
Yeah.
We made the show.
So we got all our props again. Yep. We got a bike horn and a slinky, and they could come on Amazon Prime in 2 days. Awesome, because that's a very specific gag. And we did it.
And we had a ram puppet from the Three Billy Goats Gruff.
Yes.
And I had made shofars as the DIY shofar this week. So then we had shofars for the silent shofar because that's what it's called.
Well, there's two. You have to have two shofars in the show. One that doesn't work and one that works.
Yes.
So yeah, it took us like a week, but we had time enough, let's say, to do it. And then this morning. No one said a thing, because that's the thing, is like you're always like in your brain about like, oh my God, they're going to notice, and there's going to be like, why is that? Wait a second. That is not. Those puppets are different from the trailer on your website.
I just blame everything on the pandemic.
That's true. I didn't even think about that. That would have been a good excuse.
I was just going to be like, it's the pandemic. We couldn't go back, but I could go back, but I don't know. It was the pandemic brain. There's mommy brain, pandemic brain.
That's right.
I don't know.
I was just going to be like, just tell the story of just like my wife went back to New York City and she got an ultrasound and her dentist and the flu shot. And it was the one thing that she didn't bring. But no, I didn't have to explain any of that. And you shouldn't theater lesson, never let the audience in on there's a problem.
That's
never
true.
Just do it, and if somebody talks to you, if somebody's like at the back of their brain like, huh, something's going on there. Just let it be. You do a secret podcast like we're doing now after the fact, where you can let them in on the something that happened. But the story is that we rose to the occasion yet again, mm-hmm. did a good show, and we learned that we could do this show with an all-female cast. Because number one, it's an all-male cast. Yeah. So many of our early shows, that's just what I wrote. I wasn't thinking at the time.
We've matured.
We had puppets of color in the show. Mm-hmm. By the way, the little girl in the end, the little Jewish girl, is a Jew of color.
Awesome.
By the way, yeah.
Well, it's a Reformed temple too. So, you know, we're like, not to mm-hmm. say that if you're a Jew of color, you need to be going to a Reformed temple. No. I'm not saying that at all. I just mean like that it's a very accepting temple of everyone. And we stop talking, see, just stop talking.
Yeah. So
we're so happy.
Well, when you have a woman rabbi.
Who looks so cute.
You know it's Reformed. That's basically what we've seen. Right, but there are more conservative temples with the lady rabbis.
Yes, that's right.
Thing. But Orthodox probably not. There is a very famous Black Orthodox rabbi rapper out there, and I suggest you Google it because he's amazing. And what he had to do to become what he has become is a very inspiring story. I don't remember his name. I apologize. So we did it.
We did it.
Boom. That's right.
We made it through another situation. Woo. Yeah. Oh, man. Well, I didn't know we were going to tell that story, but you know what?
It's such a good story. Oh, no. I was thinking today. I was like, you know what? Because we're celebrating our 10th year anniversary. 10 years with this puppet company.
This puppet company,
mm-hmm. At the beginning, we didn't have room to bring the book of the diary that I kept 10 years ago. Of like our beginning shows and all the mistakes that we made and stuff that we were reading from the earlier in the podcast. But it felt just like that, where I was like, oops, okay, we just got to figure this out and throw some things together and blah, right?
So we did it.
That kind of stuff has not happened in a while. 7 years because we've just had the shows done.
Yeah.
And we've had our rhythm, you know, going, and like everything has been peachy keen. And now, like, monkey wrenches are being thrown at us every single day, and something slipped through the cracks.
Well, it happens. I was really appreciative that you were so understanding, and thanks.
Yeah, whatever. Everybody makes mistakes. Didn't we learn from Daniel Tiger today?
What was
that song?
When accidents happen, tell someone, and it'll be better because of that. Something like that.
Yeah, well, that felt very...
When an accident
did
happens.
You feel like... There, like, this is very personal episode of Daniel Tiger, guys.
I was definitely looking at both of the kids, like, right? You tell someone, right, guys? Right? Well, before we sign off, we should say Happy Rosh Hashanah, mm-hmm. Which is the Jewish New Year. It started sundown on Friday night, and it's a two-day celebration.
Isn't Yom Kippur the New Year?
Well, it's the beginning of, so God opens up the book on Rosh Hashanah, and right. is now a holy time.
Yeah, so he's got the naughty list and the nice list.
Well, let's not put it like that, but he writes out... My understanding is that he writes out everything that's going to happen for the year for mm-hmm. everybody, and you hope that that it will be a good year. And so it's an auspicious time. It's a positive time. It's a very holy time, and also it's a time to eat a lot of apples and honey and pomegranates. And other things that are evocative of the harvest season, but specifically apples and honey for a sweet new year. So I wish you all a happy Rosh Hashanah, Shana Tova, happy new year, and have some apple slices with honey for a sweet new year.
Yay. Yeah. And shout out to all of our friends. Shout out to everybody in chat. So hey, Tyler and Robina and Grandma Lee.
Yeah, my mom. And Marika. And Rebecca and Alyssa and
Uncle Tom.
We love you guys.
That's right. Go Bills, Uncle Tom, if you're watching the game. Although somebody tells me Uncle Tom and us shared the connection of like we could take it or leave it in terms of like American football. It's kind of like,
Well, I heard the game was delayed because of lightning. So, ooh. I know. Exciting, right?
Yeah, I guess so.
All right. Well, we're going to say our goodbyes.
Okay. Thanks for listening, everybody. And you can check us out. We are on, if you go to puppetparentpodcast.com, that's right. She's pointing out the letters that are on the video. And we hugged earlier, by the way, if you're just listening to that. We had the hug moment where we hugged.
Who hugged?
We hugged. Let's keep hugging.
Oh, okay.
Yay.
I can hug you. I can't hug other people right now.
That's right.
I can hug you.
We're a pod.
We're podding.
We're like the podlings from the Dark Crystal.
No,
we won
not.
An Emmy, by the way.
I
won
saw that.
Won an Emmy. Slam dunk. Yeah. Puppet shows.
Mm-hmm. Well-deserved Emmy.
So anyway, we're on Spotify. We're on all those different things. There's a list of things that we are on, including Facebook. By the way, we're recording this live at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time every single Sunday. If we're not with you on that time, then we will, like last week, we will send out a little notice. But yeah, check us out, and we will see you next time.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.